Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes.
3, 2. Who's introducing me? Okay. Welcome to Footnotes. I am Paul Patterson with Mission Ridge. I am joined with
Logan Daly,
Rob Croyle.
Special guest,
Lauren Tobias.
And Lauren Tobias, we need to talk about you a little bit because
context matters.
Context matters. You're one of my favorite people, and you're not exactly a Christian.
No.
Okay. I don't want to put words in your mouth. So, but you're a good friend of Logan and I's, and we've had tons of conversations. We shoot you ideas all the time, and you correct us, or you develop it, and you blow our brains, and you're moving away this Thursday?
Yes.
And
no.
I'm completely crushed by that. So I'm glad that you're here with us today. And you weren't here during Sermon Club, but we tried to fill you in as much as we could. So we look forward to hearing what you have to share. So with all that said...
Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Yes. With all that said, this Sunday we're talking about peace when it comes to our Advent series and what the coming of the Christ child looks like in our world and for us personally, and what peace looks like. So we're only going to talk about two ideas today. We're going to talk about the contrast of desert and water, because obviously if you're going through a desert, water is kind of important. And so we're just going to kind of develop that metaphorically and how, in general, how scripture develops that as well. So when you think of desert and water metaphorically, what do you guys think of?
Well, when I think of a desert, I think of a lack of water. That's my initial. You think of a barren wasteland with no water, and water is valuable, sacred.
You must have gone to the University of Idaho.
Yeah, I did, but I also grew up in a desert. So you think of water as it's a valuable commodity there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's necessary for life.
Also picture, you know, desert as being an unsafe place. Like really, if you're going to be out there, you need to have someone who's your guide that could lead you through, because it's not a place that you go to just...
Yeah, you're exposed. You have no covering, no shade, no protection.
I know I don't have the expertise. Like, someone that has the expertise, you know, you could survive. But if you don't have the expertise, like, and we hear stories of someone going out and just getting stuck and not having the tools to survive and not having the knowledge on how to survive. So I'd want a guide.
Okay.
If I was going to go to the desert.
Well, and someone who knows the geography, specifically that location, right? Like, where do you find water?
Right.
Because if you can't find water, you die.
Yep.
So let's make the metaphorical transition then. What does this mean for us? Like, when it comes to our personal lives, how do we find water in the deserts that we go through?
We go through spiritual deserts is what you're meaning. Or just deserts?
Just deserts. Well, I think of Rob, and how long has it been that your house has not sold?
I put it on the market in August.
And technically you're homeless because of that still?
Yeah, I would consider myself.
He's about a home.
Yeah.
In Missoula, yes.
I think of the summer when I was struggling with anxiety tons. I mean, I still struggle with it, but it's been about 2 months since I've had a panic attack, so it's getting better. But
yeah,
like, I think about that time. Just the feeling, the feelings of loneliness, of being overwhelmed by the responsibilities of life, and there's no way I can get through this. And for me, that's what I think of.
Well, and for Christy and I, like, we could look back and we know that we're supposed to be here. We know that we're better off being here. And God has spoken to us about a lot of different things, but the whole conversation about the house, like, I'm like, wow, where's that conversation, God? Like, he's been silent.
Yeah.
He's been quiet.
think like a mindset, like the, for me, like difference between like going through periods of being in a desert versus having more water. I think it's like being in a mindset of like scarcity versus abundance, because there's more available to you. So like when you're in a desert, like every small thing, like you have to make best use of every resource you have, like that's coming your way. Because you don't know, like with a desert, you might kill an iguana, don't know the next time you might have the opportunity to eat. So kind of just making a best.
To be clear, they didn't have iguanas in the Middle East, but that's fine.
Oh.
Well, it could be an iguana desert. Come on. You didn't specify.
I'm sorry. You're right. But no, scarcity versus abundance and making the most of what you have. I'm trying to get you back on your train of thought.
Thank you. Yeah, the iguanas are real.
Make me hungry.
For iguanas.
I've never eaten an iguana.
Me either, but come on. That's the other white meat.
Let's go to Petco. Petco.
But if you were in a desert and that's all you had to eat.
That would be all over.
No. I'm not gonna help you out. So much of what you just said, I love, because we back at Real Life talked about this mindset of scarcity versus abundance. Like, do you believe the world is a world of scarcity? Because if you believe that, why would you ever be generous? Why would you ever be hospitable? Why would you ever care for people? If you believe the world that God created is generous and abundant, then of course you have plenty to share. At the same time, the desert teaches us that we don't have a lot. And like God's trying to teach us this lesson of just having enough. And so there's like this paradox that happens, that God's trying to teach us to believe that he will provide, that there is enough, at the same time knowing that there isn't enough. And it's this is why the Greek versus Jewish mindset is important when you read the Bible, because you have to understand paradox. It's just accepted, and it's trying to teach us these things that contradict each other, but they're both true. And so, do you believe there's enough? Good. That means you can help people. By the way, you're going through the desert and you don't have enough, so figure that out. And that's the end of my brain train, if anyone wants to pick it up from there.
Like it.
Okay. Like, he'll leave it up to, like, God will leave it up to you to figure it out until your, like, very last hour, and then we'll be there at the bottom of the barrel.
Yep.
Did you
Pretty much.
Did you go to a Bible college?
No.
Bible college. Don't need to go.
We have it.
Because, yeah.
Lobbing a grenade.
I'm a full supporter of Boise Bible College, and I loved it.
Proud alumni.
But Lauren is schooling. This is why Lauren's here, because we text her things, or we share with her things, and then she replies with a quick text message, and Logan and Rob and I are like, it blows our brains. So anyway.
Well, I've got to say in response to that, I don't know if this, you can cut this out, sure. If this is not like, but I feel like these guys have, I like to think about these things, but I feel like a lot of the Christians or Catholics I've talked to are like jaded about Catholicism or Christianity in a lot of ways. But I feel like the way that you guys go about like trying to workshop how these ideas could be relevant to not only Christians, but like everyone, makes me feel like welcome to share these ideas, that I feel like I have ideas that are relevant to Christianity, but like when it's a lot of times when it's like framed in a really like a cookie cutter kind of way, like there's no real way for like new ideas to get in, but I feel like we can really like have great conversations, and I'm very thankful to like that you invite me to share these thoughts and that we can talk. So
I wouldn't enjoy
very happy to
that out.
That's no,
right no, there. We're keeping that.
Yeah, that's good. Because
that'd be a lesson.
I didn't know if I was offending any Christians.
Do with that what like, you will. Let you, that be a lesson.
You may have offended some Christians. You didn't offend us. Okay. We're no. for us, what. This is not on the whiteboard of things to discuss, but for us, this openness of discussion and sharing of ideas, we believe only helps truth be perpetuated. And rather than saying, as you were saying, having a cookie cutter version and not allowing other voices into the conversation, it actually prevents us from sharing our ideas. And from a very pastor Christian standpoint, letting other people know that, hey, I believe in Jesus. I think he's cool. I think you should believe in him too. Like, you and I wouldn't have a relationship if we were the full cookie. Well, we would have a relationship, but you probably wouldn't be here on a podcast with us. And your ideas, I would entertain, and my ideas, you would entertain. And obviously, like I said, I think Jesus is true. But if I wasn't willing to entertain your ideas, or at least have you part of the conversation, you wouldn't be willing to entertain the idea of Jesus more. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
If we wouldn't make space for other people in the conversation, why would they make space for us?
Yes.
What he said. Mm-hmm. That kind of, I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
That's a really good.
So let's move on, because we're all on short time today.
And yep. We're going to ramble forever on this.
Yeah, we are. So we want to talk about the 400 years. So between the Old Testament and the New Testament, 400 years before Jesus showed up.
What was the Bible nerdery term for that?
What?
The Bible nerdery term for that?
Oh, the intertestamental time period.
Yeah.
There you go.
Intertestamental. Intertestamental.
Yeah. I struggle with talking, so it's nice when I see other people struggle with talking.
Intertestamental.
Intertestamental.
It's kind of fun to say.
If you are not careful, you can say it very incorrectly.
Oh, I'm thinking so.
Okay. Mission Ridge Church. Anyway, 400 years.
That was it.
She's not a Christian. Doesn't matter. She can say whatever the heck she wants to.
Wow.
Until we baptize her.
One of us was going to say it.
If that's my role here, to say the things that can't be said.
You are more than welcome.
Hopefully take that on.
It helps us feel better.
We feel more righteous.
Yeah, we feel more.
Oh, for crying out loud. Paul, keep talking about
400,
this.
Okay, so 400 years. 400 years before the time Jesus shows up. There's this time that nothing happens. And I'm going to put nothing in finger quotes, because there's actually a lot that happens.
Sure.
But
it's not recorded.
It is.
It's not recorded in the Bible.
Not in our Bible, no.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. If you're a Catholic, there's a few extra books.
Mm, that's right.
If you're good. The whole point is that there's no significant change. I'm disagreeing with myself as I talk. This is great. This is what my wife puts up with. It's
There are words. There's prophet after prophet after prophet after prophet that speaks, and then there seemingly is this silence.
Sure.
Except for
Maccabees, and I'll just throw that out there.
Yep.
That's the big thing I'm disagreeing with.
And that's an experiential thing. It wasn't so much something that was...
Well, you can imagine if you're a Jew and you've been under oppression since well before the Babylonian...
takeover.
Exile. Like, for hundreds of years, your people have been a slave.
Right.
And then you have the Maccabees that happens, and for the first time in hundreds of years, you're finally free.
Right.
But that only lasts for a couple generations. And so your kid, so during your time, you free your people, and then your kid becomes a slave again. Like, you can imagine, like, the frustration of that. So... Yeah. During this 400 years, quote unquote, nothing happens, other than this huge Maccabean revolt. But
which is where we get Hanukkah.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I always think of a.
You can say that loud and proud.
Happy Hanukkah.
We like Jews.
We did find out.
We had a Jew preach
this
last
Sunday. Jewish.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I learned that this last week, and I was like, what?
Why didn't you hear what you said?
We found out this week that you were Jewish.
Oh, yes, yes.
And we didn't know that was part of your story. That was pretty cool.
So automatically you're an expert.
Oh, maybe that's why.
Yeah, probably.
All right, two out of three of us. Logan's pretty happy with himself. He knew.
I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure
I told him all that at one point.
You probably did. I forget things all the time.
Yeah, it's all right. So yeah. 400 years.
Been trying on that one for 15 minutes.
And it was silent.
And it's gone. Nothing happens.
But God is in the
silence. So it's, okay, this is where I was going. It's actually worse than silence. It's like God teased you with the potential of redemption and salvation for your nation. And then it's gone again. And so like you have this 400 years of worse than nothing happening.
And the Jews are working hard. The Pharisaical system came into play, where the Pharisees were doing all they could to live a righteous life so that they have God's favor again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, we talked about this last week a little bit with Marty on Footnotes of the different groups. So we talked about the Essenes breaking off, going off into the desert to try to drive and bring Messiah through studying the text, being people of the text. And you have the Pharisees that were trying to live super righteously.
Trying to get everybody on board.
You've got the Zealots who are just going to
kill everyone.
They're just going to force the overthrow, but also righteously. So we've got this. This is kind of going on. And it's not like they're just sitting there moping about it.
No, they are. If dancing would get God to show up, they are dancing hard.
They're
doing all that they can to
to
bring about this salvation that they're hoping for. And like my experience doesn't compare to that.
No. Well, I think as Americans, we can't even relate to this. We were bashing America earlier. Back here again.
This is a totally fine one.
But we can't comprehend 400 years in existence as a nation being oppressed by another nation.
Our nation isn't even 400 years
exactly old. Like we can't comprehend this. So imagine the anticipation of your prophets, your scripture, all talking about this new person that's going to come. And it may not necessarily even a new person, but you're just waiting for God to finally fix it and to free you again. And they just sit and they have to wait, and they're trying to figure out how are they going to live faithfully during this process. And sometimes they're zealots, and sometimes they're Pharisees, sometimes they're Herodians, sometimes they give in, sometimes they're the prodigal son, and they just go to the place of 10 cities that I just forgot the name of.
Decapolis,
thank you. And they hang out with pigs.
And this is not the first time that this nation experienced 400 years of waiting.
Yeah. And this is actually our big setup, by the way. So back in Genesis, actually, we talked about it 2-3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about it in James 4?
We talked about it a little bit there, I think.
Yeah. So in James 4, it talks about having patience and long-suffering. And the word there was a unique word that isn't often used. But the first time it shows up in the Old Testament is?
Is Exodus 15, I believe, 15:13.
Genesis 15.
Exodus 15.
Genesis
15:13. Okay. Yes, you are correct. Yeah, so the word is humble, so humble yourself.
Yeah.
James says to humble yourself, and that word means to enslave yourself. It's the same word that's tied to this connection where God tells Abram, God hasn't changed Abram's name yet. He says your people will be humbled or will be enslaved for 400 years. And the question we wrestle with is, are we willing to sit in the mess even though we know that we don't know how long this is going to last?
Yeah. Well, and I think of family heritages and like their histories and people who sacrifice themselves in order to better their timeline, their lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are we willing to live a life that's bigger than ourselves? Like, we know that our life is going to suck and that we're going to suffer and that we may never see justice in our life, but we're going to live in such a way that future generations will experience freedom.
Yeah. I've actually seen that through, and I just saw this, but a buddy of mine's from Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
and his parents sacrificed everything so that all the kids would go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And like the second generation is living a much different life because of what the parents sacrificed.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't come here to live an opulent life. They came here to set the next generation up to live a better life.
Well, and this reminds me, we think our personal choices are just personal choices. They're never personal choices. They always have community impacts, and not just presently, but for the future's coming. That the way I treat my child today is going to impact not just him, but his child and the child after that.
Right.
For me, I think of just, getting out of debt and how much that's going to teach our kids. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking budgeting. We're talking, you have to be responsible. You have to, you have to consider all these things.
Yep.
And the fact that we're already debt-free that we're saving, we're not just paying off a mortgage, but we're saving for their college, we're saving for investments. Like, how much is that going to change their life? Of course, that's a very American way of thinking of this 400 years, but...
That's fine because we're all American.
Okay. I feel like I just shot myself in the foot.
Kind of.
I did. But anyway, we don't realize how much the decisions we make today, right now, impact not just our community, but the future of our community.
Well, like Marty mentioned, I think, in the last podcast, that the efforts of the Essenes in particular, and they were living out in the desert, and I've actually been to the place where they lived, and their focus was on the Word, and they believed that if they would intentionally pursue God through His Word, that His salvation would come. And they were right, because John the Baptist was part of that community, and he's the one that baptized Jesus. And
he baptized Jesus
within miles.
Eyesight. Yeah, with an eyesight from the
Essenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
it's almost a shout out.
It is very much a shout out. But it also makes me think that I think God rewards the pure motives that we have, even if those motives are slightly wrong.
Yeah.
And that sounds...
Well, I mean... because
it almost sounds heretical in my mind, but...
No, because, I mean, think of it, the Essenes, they didn't have it completely right, because they were called, the Israelites, they were called to be a people that were in this trade thoroughfare and were going to be bumping into people and call it a light of the world, if you will, to use a little seasonal phraseology. But they kind of became reclusive. And they did it for good intentions, because they felt like this is what we have to do to get back to the text. And they did it for the right intentions, even if it wasn't completely what God may have intended for them originally. It's still this, through their best intentions, God still made this work.
Right.
Well, and this makes me think of Hebrews 11, where you have all these people listed that were complete screw-ups and womanizers and cowards and,
Hall of Faith.
Yeah, the Hall of Faith. Like, you had Barack, not Obama.
No, the other Barack.
The other Barack. Who, he was unwilling to do anything without a woman helping him. Which, what woman power, but in this world, was shameful.
Yeah.
And the writer of Hebrews includes Barack. And actually, by the way, in my opinion, I think the writer of Hebrews includes Barack in this Hall of Faith because he's trying to say this man was a wimp. And he needed a woman to help him because the woman was actually
the one that was
doing it. I'm taking offense. Okay, yeah.
Anyway, but you have all these people who were imperfect, screwed up, flawed, and God's like, these are examples of what faith looks like because they tried something and they stuck with it. Even if it's Samson, who was a degenerate. Womanizer.
Come on, he was great. He didn't do anything wrong ever.
No, he was no. Would you, as a father, Rob, would you be happy? Would you be proud if your son became Samson?
Well, his parents were part of the problem.
That is not an answer to the question.
Well, it's part of the answer to the question because his parents.
I'm looking for a yes or a no here. I have to leave.
The answer is no.
Okay.
And I would have to look at myself and go, man, how far did the apple fall from the tree?
Sure. And that I agree with all that. And that actually goes back to this idea of 400 years. Are you willing to live a life today that will have a significant impact in 400 years, even if you don't see it in your lifetime?
Are we willing to, as a church plant, to live in such a way that in 400 years people look back and go, wow, look what Mission Ridge did. They sacrifice so a community would know that there is a living God.
Even more important than that, are we willing to live as a church plant? Sorry, yeah, we're totally doing the hand on top of the baseball bat. Are we willing to live in such a way that in 400 years, no one knows our name? Because I actually don't like that question now, because I want people to know who I am and think I'm cool.
I know who you are.
I think you're cool.
Which is natural. I feel like, where does that come from, that everyone wants to leave a legacy on the world?
They do, because we want to know our life matters, right? Mm-hmm. I want to know my life matters.
It's like an ego thing in a way, but who doesn't have it? That's what we are.
We need to stop this conversation. And Lauren jumps in right at the end, and now I want to keep talking, but I'm gonna be.
We'll get her on another podcast.
Almost 15 minutes.
Time. Oh yeah, it's fine. We could dial you in.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
We got the technology.
We can.
This
make
is my
it happen.
First podcast ever, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so
Paul's
much for joining.
Tapping on the table and driving me nuts.
I am so happy. That was Lauren.
Man. Sorry.
Thank you for joining us, and
it's been a pleasure.
In all honesty, as a friend, I'm gonna really miss you, and I am deeply hurt that you have decided that I am not worth it to live in Missoula anymore. So you're moving away.
It will be a desert for a time. I'll come back.
Look at her throwing scripture back at me. This is great.
That's beautiful.
And on that note, thank you for joining us for another episode of Footnotes. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.